It is rare you will see me say, nope, I'm not going to try that because I don't know how to do it. I will figure it out.
One of the things that I've loved about your journey is that it's not linear and it's not traditional, but you took what you've learned and all those transferable skills and you leveled up and you leveraged that to your advantage.
I took that as a challenge, a personal challenge. Like, I'm going to show you all, like, I'm not just this, I'm much more.
Welcome to the She's So Sweet podcast, where we interview accomplished women who have worked their way to the C-suite. I'm your host, Christy Falteruso, Chief Customer Officer and award-winning Customer Success Executive. I am so thrilled to welcome our guest and my personal friend, Miranda Dekonski. Miranda, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I am excited to be hanging out with you today, but also for this podcast. What an awesome gift you're giving to the community.
I think back to, and you could probably agree, right? Like, I think back to my early career, and I don't feel like I had the same visibility to emulate women who have made it this far in their careers, right? Like, I just don't feel like I had access to that. And like hearing their stories and feeling like I had somebody to feel like, oh yeah, me too. And so I felt like this was a gift back to everyone who's trying to accomplish great things in their career. And there's so many ambitious people out there. So I know your story is going to resonate.
Yeah, I'm excited to share it. And I agree. I didn't have exposure to, you know, or access to all these awesome resources back in the day. So we're in a great time. So
we definitely are. Well, listen, before we get to all the good stuff, I want to tell our listeners all about you. So if you could, let's start by sharing a little bit about your current role and what your responsibilities look like.
Yeah, so I am the SVP of Customer Success and Operations at DataAssembly. I own everything post-sale, customer success, solutions engineering, and then, as I said, all the operations stuff as well. The VP of operations, as of January 1st, reports up to me, which is exciting because she's another badass female that's making her way. And yeah, this has been the culmination of many years. I've held titles from CCO, COO, and down to director and head of, and everything in between. We're talking 25-year journey now at this point, so.
I think my favorite thing about watching your career over the past couple of years is that you don't ever own one title. Like, I feel like you are the queen of owning multiple roles. And these are never small roles either. Like, you just introduced yourself, right? You're overseeing customer success, customer experience, but operations as well. So, I mean, I feel like you always have your hands full.
Yeah, I like it that way, though, right? I'm the kind of person who I love to be challenged and learn new things all the time. I think if I was put into one bucket, I would probably get bored. I like my days to be filled with really cool problems to solve and great people to partner with. That's why, and what you're referring to, like, you know, I was the chief people officer at Swiftly and owned at the last company before this company, BizOps, finance, you name it, HR, on top of everything for customer success. So yeah, I don't know if I'm just a glutton for punishment or somebody who likes to have my hands in many pots. I haven't figured out yet. So
I think that people just see you as a very capable person. And so I think that they just trust that you'll get it done. But listen, I want to go back a little bit, right? So I'm confident that when you were a young girl, you didn't dream of becoming a VP of customer success. You didn't dream of becoming a CCO. So what did you want to do, right? When you were a little girl, when you were thinking about your future?
Yeah, it's kind of funny. Thinking back, I actually wanted to be a juvenile probation officer. Which
okay,
is
you're
just,
gonna have to elaborate.
It's just a weird thing to aspire to be. So I lived in a very rural area where either you worked in education, the prison system, manufacturing. We had lots of prisons in our area. So, you know, a lot of the folks that I saw were working in one of these avenues. And I always had this passion of helping people. I grew up in poverty, which you know, and I thought, wouldn't it be great if I could help troubled youth get on the right path? you think I would have been like, I'm going to be a therapist or I'm going to be a school counselor. I'm like, no, juvenile probation.
Those others are too obvious for you, Miranda. Like, that's not that you would never go that route.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's, you know, it. I thought, you know, you get these people when they're young and they're already heading down a bad path. Maybe I could make a difference. Now, I will tell you, I did talk to a lot of people that worked in juvenile probation, and my mind was quickly changed because they made me aware that you kind of, sometimes you can get deflated because you don't have the resources available or the impact that you want to make. Like, you can't control the outcomes. And I have a bit of a problem with not being able to control outcomes. So I made a quick decision to pivot and do something different because I want to be doing something that makes an impact, but that I also have a little bit of more control over. So
that makes complete sense. Now, how did you eventually end up in customer success in tech? Like, what did that, how did that aspiration kind of lead you to where you are?
Just luck. To be quite frank, it wasn't deliberate. So rewind 20 something years ago, I was a young single mom. I was, you know, receiving public assistance, working at a bank, making minimum wage, barely making it. I had a job opportunity that was brought to me to join this very large company where I ended up spending 9 years. They were looking for someone that spoke Spanish. And to do account management, manage these accounts in Mexico. And then I went and I interviewed and I got the job. This was in 2001, 2002. I ended up, again, spending 9 years there, but that was kind of what got my start in the portfolio management world. Well, then, you know, I decided I wanted to get into tech startups. Left Michigan, joined a startup here in Silicon Valley area, and now I'm on my 9th startup. So all of those skills that I learned in that very large organization were very transferable and were kind of like the foundation of a career for me, even though I didn't know it at the time, that I was building this amazing foundation that would be incredibly valuable to so many companies that are much smaller, getting started, trying to just figure out, how the hell do I do this? Like, I had the playbooks, I had the knowledge, and I just came out and, yeah, the rest is kind of history, right? So
I love that because I think that there are so many people, you know, at this point in their career also trying to figure out what is the next step for them. And I think it's always very inspiring to hear that people are able to make these pivots. And it's one of the things that I've loved about your journey is that it's not linear and it's not traditional, but you took what you've learned and all those transferable skills and you leveled up and you leveraged that to your advantage. And so I know that's only a part of it for you. So when you reflect back at your kind of career journey, what are some of those pivotal moments for you, right? What are some of those, you know, key decisions that you made in your career that you think contributed most to your ascent to the C-suite?
Yeah, I mean, first, I remember how scary it was leaving a very, very stable company, very large company with great benefits, packing up my belongings, my son's belongings, driving to California. But that really changed my career. I would still probably be at that same company struggling to, you know, rise up. I would never have achieved, I shouldn't say never. It would have been very difficult in that organization for me to achieve a C-level title, with my background. And I knew that. I saw the people at C-level there and I couldn't see myself in them. They're wonderful, very intelligent humans, but I couldn't see myself in them. So really the taking a risk and going smaller and going somewhere where there needed to be a lot of building and a lot of things created, it changed the trajectory of my career, along with the mindset of, it's not created, no problem, I'll create it. I don't know how to do it. No problem. I'll learn how to do it, right? It is rare you will see me say, nope, I'm not going to try that because I don't know how to do it. I will figure it out. And that has been a huge, huge asset to my career and a real pivotal mindset to getting me to where I am.
Well, listen, I know that journey is not easy. And you know, we've shared stories, right? We both have our own pathways to how we got to where we are, and both very unique and not linear, not easy. And so I'd love for you to share a little bit about, you know, kind of what some of those battle scars were, or what are those significant challenges or obstacles you faced? Because I feel like that is a big part of getting to these roles, right? And that level is you have to overcome these challenges. So when you think about that, what were some of those big early obstacles that you had to navigate, and how did you overcome those?
Yeah. One that really comes to mind, I remember earlier in my career going into a senior leader's office and letting them know that I was interested in a specific role in their department. And in his very professional way, he pretty much told me he didn't think that I would be a good fit for that role. And then in not directly, but in his own way, told me that I should be very happy that I was in the role I was in. Now, granted, in that moment, I was a single mom. I was putting myself through college. They usually had a requirement that you had to have a bachelor's degree to work there. So I knew that they had made probably an exception for me. I don't know what the conversations ever were behind, you know, closed doors, but I knew, and I felt so grateful to be there. So I never challenged that individual. I just walked away with, oh, he's right. I should just shut my mouth pretty much and sit down and be thankful I have this role. But then as I continued and I wanted more and I wanted more and I wanted more, I knew that that wasn't right and that wasn't true and I deserved much more. And it was one of the decisions that prompted me to kind of move on. After spending many years there. And I don't think he even realized how his words came across. I don't think he meant any harm, but just that moment, like I knew I wasn't going to be able to go much higher in that organization. There was another moment where I was interviewing for a role, internal role, and somebody else was. And I was called in to let me know that they were going to give it to the other person, because if they didn't, they were afraid that that person would leave. And I was very understanding. And then again, I was a single mom and jobs were scarce. I said, okay, I get it. And I knew I wasn't going to get that role, even though I'd been there longer and I was just as qualified. I wouldn't say more because the person they gave it to was amazing, but that was not the reason why I would have liked to lose out on something, because they know I wouldn't leave, right? So I have had a lot of obstacles like that to overcome. And the big learning lesson for me was you have well-intentioned people everywhere. They don't know the impact sometimes of their words or their actions, but they do cut. They can cut deep. And again, well-intentioned people can really impact the direction of someone else's career. So I take it very, very personal now as somebody who's in a leadership role to be careful. I'm not saying I'm perfect, but to be very careful when people approach me about leadership opportunities or career advice or anything. Like, the sky's the limit. Just because I view someone some way doesn't mean it's facts, right?
Right.
People are more than what they're more than what they are in that moment. The potential can be limitless. And I'm proof of that. You know, I have since surpassed, my career has surpassed those individuals' career now. And they didn't give me that chance. Others did. And I showed them, right?
Yeah, so. Listen, I love that. And it's also so disappointing to hear that someone else's limiting beliefs of us, right, in this situation of you, kind of held you hostage for a little bit, right? Like it you kind of sat back and they're almost said and kind of accepted that in that moment until you took the action and said, you know what, actually, no, there is potential for me. I have potential. There is something else I could or should be doing. The She's So Sweet podcast is brought to you by Client Success. Client Success is an all-in-one customer success platform to help post-sale implementation and success teams manage customers from new to renew. Through an industry-leading platform approach, Client Success gives businesses an in-depth view into customer health, product usage trends, along with churn and risk data so that your team can not only retain customers, but help them grow as well. Whether it's managing customer onboarding workflows in shared portals, building custom health scores, tracking sentiment with NPS surveys, or doing more with less through AI and automations, Client Success gives customer success professionals a true one-stop platform to manage all aspects of the customer journey. To learn more about the industry's fastest-to-implement customer success platform, visit www.clientsuccess.com. That's Client Success. Simple, powerful customer success. I talk to a lot of women who share struggles with me that they feel stuck in their current role, right? And stuck is for a ton of reasons, right? Especially nowadays, they feel stuck because of the current market and how competitive the landscape is, and finding a new job feels like this daunting situation that they're not going to be able to leave and find something. And gosh forbid their company finds out that there is like sniff, like there's blood in the water, that they might even be looking to leave, right? They're concerned about their experiences, right? Maybe they've just transitioned into tech or customer success and our experiences. They don't know that they have the knowledge or experiences to leave. What do you recommend when you hear this? When you're talking to these women who feel stuck, what do you advise them to do?
Well, one, know that you're not stuck first. Like, I know it can feel like it in the moment. I've been there. I've lived it. Just, you know, take that moment and invest in yourself, right? That's what I did. I knew when I had that person pretty much telling me to be happy with where I am, that I wasn't, and I wasn't going to let that happen. Every single opportunity I had to learn something new or build on my resume, I raised my hand for it. Like, I was investing in myself. I was getting my degree. I was learning how to do auditing, learning how to build training programs, learning Six Sigma lean methodologies, right? Like, I took that as a challenge, a personal challenge. Like, I'm going to show you all, like, I'm not just this, I'm much more, and I will unstuck myself, right? That's the thing. If you wait for someone else to do it for you, it may never happen. You have to take control of it and do it yourself. Another thing is, yes, the market is really crap right now. Let's just call it what it is.
Yep.
It is flooded with very talented individuals out there, very competitive. Don't let that dissuade you, okay? Stay on top of your game. Get into the interviews, even if you don't get picked. Keep interviewing, keep doing it, because you're building up on yourself and you're building your skill sets. The market won't always be like this. And when it opens up, the employers that are not currently investing in their employees' growth are going to feel it the hardest, because those employees are going to go somewhere else with all the skills that they built and build an empire at a different organization. So, but my biggest advice is don't wait for someone. Take control of it yourself.
I think that that's spot on. And I love to see that. I do believe that more people are trying to do that. I don't think it's in everyone's comfort zone. So we got to keep encouraging folks to break out and actually just lean into owning their career. But now we've got this, the other side of this, right? In tech, we know that there are a ton of startups. We see companies opening up every single day, all sizes. But when you think about these smaller organizations, which I think are great opportunities for people that do want to get that experience and that exposure, they want to get an early start, they want to wear all the hats to learn as much as they can. But then you take on this role and you feel like you could be stuck because the organization isn't maturing as you feel like you are. And so maybe there doesn't feel like there is a leadership spot that's open, or maybe that, you know, you're not hiring and growing, especially in this market. What do you say to those people who feel like, you know what, as an organization, I want to be here, they're investing in me, but I don't feel like I have the upward trajectory that I'd like to see for myself personally in this organization? How can someone in that type of an environment or that role, how can they continue to grow?
when I see this and I have these conversations with individuals, one of the first things I ask is, have you made your desires known? And you would be surprised how many times the individual on the other side of the Zoom call is like, no, I'm afraid to, or I don't, you know, I don't know who I would have that conversation with, or, you know, I'm worried because I want my boss's job. I'm worried that they're going to be, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's usually the response. But I get it too, because of where the economy is, people have this fear. You have to advocate for yourself. You have to make your desires known. That's thing one. Even if you're not, even if you don't feel comfortable saying, Christy, I want to be the CCO, let them know, I want to follow your path. Like, you're amazing. I aspire to have a very similar career as you. Can you guide me and talk me through what are the skills I need to be working on to, you know, help me move in that path? I think that's thing one. Thing two, especially in smaller companies, look around. What's not being done? Where are there holes? Where are there gaps? What are the needs? Start filling it. Start filling those holes and gaps and needs, and make sure you're sharing that with leadership. Like, hey, I wrote this standard operating procedure because I noticed every CSM is doing these things five different ways. What do you think? Do you think this would be helpful, right? To get us all on the same page? Or me, HR, right? Hey, we don't have hiring best practices, interview guidelines. You know, every candidate that comes through, I've heard they're not getting follow-up. Let's create a process for candidate flow. Like, all of these things and how I have, you know, spun my career to have, I wouldn't call myself a generalist because I still specialize in some areas, but I can dabble in many more than I specialize in because of that mindset where I see the holes and I make time, whether it's in my personal time, which is a big ask, or, you know, blocking off time on my calendar to focus on those types of things, that has helped me pave my path in startups. It's easy to do. It's easy to do. You just have to be hungry and you have to want it. And yes, sometimes you have to put in a little bit of your personal time to do it. But that's the investment you have to make sometimes to get that career growth, that title change, or move up.
All right. Well, that's a perfect segue to my next question here. So we talked about balance, right? You said sometimes you have to invest your personal time. And I believe that. Listen, I think the first 10 years or so of my career in tech, I worked all kinds of crazy hours because I also knew that if I put the time in now, I'll be able to create the balance later. And I wanted to learn. I wanted to gain those experiences. But it's hard to create that balance. So when you think about this, you know, balancing the demands of any executive level position with your work and your personal life, it's super challenging. How do you navigate that work-life balance? And are there any strategies or habits that you have put in place or that you've proven particularly effective for you?
Yeah, so I am probably a bad example of work-life balance, but I do believe as a leader, it's my responsibility to lead by example. You know, there are things I do, like I do put myself on Do Not Disturb on Slack. I make sure that when I'm able, I go out and I'll go hiking in places where there is no cell phone service or no Wi-Fi. I orchestrate opportunities for myself to be shut off. The other thing I do, I live and breathe by my calendar. So I make sure my calendar, I block times to be able to get outside, have lunch, say hi to my husband who's up the hallway and see how he's doing. And I try really hard to never let people book over it. But I will say the whole work-life balance thing, it's tough. It's really tough for women in leadership. It's really tough for anyone in leadership or any executive. You have to figure out what's right for you and make that work. I have been in on a, you know, a leadership team with mothers, right? And you're a mother and you probably as well. Like, I've seen my son's older now, but when he was younger, I would block out my calendar between 5 to 8. And I'm like, I'm sorry. I can't take any meetings between 5 to 8 because that's dinner time. That's, you know, cross country track time. It's time with my son. Right. If you need me urgently, you can text me And, you know, I'll pick up if I can, but that's my sacred time with my family, right? Everybody has to find what works for them. So.
And I think it's important, as you said, like creating those boundaries and communicating those boundaries out to folks, because I think even well-intentioned people who do the calendar blocks, right, or they kind of, they feel like they're doing their part, but they're not really communicating or articulating to folks when kind of their on and off hours are. I think that's one of the things that I've seen a lot of great leaders do is when they come into an organization or they have a new team, they're really clear in articulating kind of like their start and stops or their non-negotiables. And I think that is important. I think to your point about leading by example, it helps encourage your team to do the same thing. And that doesn't mean I'm never available outside of the hours, right? But I'm going to prioritize these things accordingly. And so unless it's urgent or something that's a priority, you can expect that I'm going to be offline, you know, from 5 to 8 or whatever that may be.
Yeah, I think this remote work has made it easier and harder at the same time. You know, I used to leave the office, get on the train, sit on the train for an hour, decompress, catch up on emails that I may have missed, you know, throughout the day, get off the train, and that was family time. And sometimes I would log on, you know, and do some projects later at night, but everybody like had that barrier. Now everything blends together. I work for a fully remote company, so I have people all over in various time zones. It makes it more challenging too, but I think being deliberate and communicating up front what you're going to be doing to set those expectations is key. Also, I encourage my team, you know, if you have like an event during the middle of the day and you want to go to your kids' school, see their play, like do it. I don't care if you do that. As long as the work gets done, I don't care when it gets done. And I think that's key, is as a leader, being flexible and showing that you're flexible. Like you don't expect, what do they say, butts and seats between 8 to 5. Like that's not the way life operates anymore. It's not the way work operates anymore. So
I couldn't agree more. Well, listen, we talked about obstacles and challenges you faced, but I want to talk about successes. I feel like as professionals, as leaders, we don't spend enough time looking back and thinking about, wow, I did that. So when you look back at your career, what would you say are some of your proudest moments or maybe your biggest accomplishments in your career to date?
Honestly, when I think about it, what makes me beam the most is the folks that have reported to me that have gone on to be VPs and executives, or, I mean, I have one former team member, she's killing it as an HR leader. And when I started, she was our community happiness manager. Now she's literally like this, again, badass female leader leading a really, at a big organization, HR. That's the stuff to me that I'm like, holy smokes, I'm so happy I took that chance on that person, or I'm so happy that I landed in a place where I could invest in them or get them the resources they needed to be able to make that path for themselves. Like, that's the stuff I love. That's the stuff I reminisce about.
Well, I mean, you definitely have a track record of grooming leaders, so you should be really proud of that because you've built people by leading by example and investing in individuals. So I think that that is very much a huge accomplishment and one you should be proud of. Now, I want to talk to yourself a little bit, right? I want you to go back, right? You've had a journey. And for people that haven't heard all the details, I know that you've been on so many podcasts and have shared so much of your background and your journey, your story. But is there a piece of advice you'd wish you had received earlier in your career? And how do you think having that information would have changed how you managed your career?
Yeah. I wish somebody would have pulled me aside and told me that my potential was limitless and that I could rise above my circumstances. I had to learn it on my own through many bad decisions, many hard knocks, like corners, like getting knocked down again and again. I think if I would have known that early on, I probably would have looked at my career in the beginning less as survival and more as a journey. In the beginning, it was just, how do I make enough money to pay the bills? And because I looked at it more as survival and less as a journey, I didn't advocate for myself early at all. I took everything at face value and didn't see the possibilities or the potential that was out there. It took me many, many years to get to where I could see the potential and the possibilities and, yeah, really learn how to advocate for myself to be able to move in the direction I wanted my career to go. So
I love that. And I think that things are limitless for you. And so as we think about your limitless future and your career continues to evolve, what's in the future for you, right? I like to believe that this isn't it for folks, right? Just because you get to a certain role or a certain level that we don't stop having these aspirations. So what does the future of your career look like? What do you want to be doing next?
It's funny because, you know, I think I have one or two more startups in me and then I'm probably done, just to be honest, because I love them. They're fun.
I think
fun.
Two is a lot.
They're exhausting. I mean, I've already been through, you know, I'm on my ninth now. I think I would like to move into like investing, working, you know, with maybe a PE firm or something like that. And, you know, I think that's where I would like to be in my 50s, right? Less me doing all the building and me helping others look around corners and build their empires, right? That's kind of where my mind is. Or, you know, who knows? Maybe I have a startup in me. Me and a couple others have talked about what would it be like if, you know, we got a technical founder, somebody who could code the code for us. And wouldn't it be awesome if I had like an all-female, like, again, badass, like, leadership team that just goes out and starts something. I don't know. Those are a couple areas where my mind has gone. But, you know, I'm not in my 50s for another half a decade. I say that trying to make it sound like it's so far out. But that's, you know, kind of what I'm thinking as far as what's next for me.
I love that. Now, before we wrap up today, what's the one thing you'd want our listeners to take away?
Yeah, I mean, aim high. Don't let anybody ever tell you that you can't do anything. I am living proof of that, that you can, no matter where you come from, no matter where you start, like anything's possible. And also, when you can, take chances, take those risks. I mean, joining small startups is risky. But it can be a career growth multiplier. So definitely take those calculated risks often as you can, because that's where the growth will happen.
I love that, Miranda. Thank you so much for your time today. To folks listening, if you've enjoyed this episode, please follow us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Please subscribe on YouTube and connect with me on LinkedIn. Thanks again, and we'll see you soon.
Hi, guys. I want to share a bit about an organization that I support called Wednesday Women. They're on a mission to increase the visibility of executive women leaders that you should know, learn from, and be inspired by. On LinkedIn, they share the profile of two amazing women each week, on Wednesdays, of course. And now just imagine if we all followed, amplified, and nominated the women that we want to see more of. Their initiative provides examples of women CEOs, founders, sales executives, technical leaders, and so many more. By supporting Wednesday Women, you'll see more of these professionals in your social feeds, of course, but also on stages, podcasts, and panels. If you're interested in learning more and supporting their initiative, head over to www.wednesdaywomen.org or follow them on LinkedIn.